Mr. Smirlinski, were you you were court appointed in this case?
Oh, sure.
All right. You have the additional thanks to the court for accepting this appointment.
You're welcome.
Fifth case for argument is United States versus Nang. Mr. Ackerman.
Good evening, court. I'm Alan Ackerman, representing Wang.
Good counsel for the government. This case is direct, straightforward.
Well, I don't understand. I don't understand the connection between Asperger's syndrome, which was very interesting, and downloading pornography. I don't understand that.
A very relevant, insightful question, if the court please.
Well, thank you. I am very pleased that you recognize my insightful character.
My answer would be under 5K2.13. There are two prongs. Doing wrong, not being able to stop doing it because you can't control it. On the one hand, it is the defense position here supported by Dr. Margolis, and this is not a glowing recommendation for Dr. Margolis, but nonetheless the record supports the proposition that he found, based on a year and a half worth of work with him, or 2 years of therapy, that he, Mr. Lane, suffered from this species of autism, commonly known now as Asperger's disorder. Now, the district court found...
I understand that, but...
Okay.
What does Asperger's have to do with self-control? Asperger's and autism, these are difficulty in relating to other people or understanding that other people are like yourself. You know, they have internal mental states and so on. You know, it's shyness carried to or social awkwardness carried to a pathological extreme. But what does that have to do with pornography?
May I read from something, and I know it's in poor taste, in fact it's prohibited by the rules, but I'm asking permission to read one sentence. One sentence.
Mr. Ackerman, you may read that one sentence.
All right. And this is from a case that I just located, People versus Youngerman, and I don't expect my opponent to respond to this morning. It's cited at 838 Northeast 2nd 103, it's First District 2005. And the opinion goes on to talk about Dr. Dinwiddie, who is a professor of psychology at University of Chicago, or was. And he diagnosed this defendant, Mr. Youngerman, as having Asperger's syndrome. And he describes it as follows. A developmental disorder characterized by profound difficulties in picking up and responding to social cues, that is CUES, comma, difficulties in social interaction, and difficulties in behaving with appropriate degrees of empathy. Now,
it sounds just like what Judge Posner.
At least in part, yes. But Dr. Margolis went further. And in his view, being the trained clinician with all sorts of degrees, whatever they're reflected in the record, in his view, the peculiar nature of being addicted to computer imaging, whether it be child pornography or perhaps even something else. And you're going to see cases in the near future about poker addiction online, and that's going to be the next one. But that said, it was the view of the physician that he knew what he was doing, it was wrong, but he couldn't control it, he couldn't stop it, and the reason was Asperger's. Now, I'm no expert on Asperger's, and apparently nobody else is either.
Well, what link? Is his argument that people with Asperger's syndrome are more comfortable dealing with pictures than with people? Is it something like that?
No, it is. He labeled it as having a very, very difficult time with executive functioning.
What's that?
Well, he described it in the record during my very short rebuttal. I'll point to it in my opening brief. I always thought executive functioning had to do with interaction with some CEO, but according to Dr. Margolis, we all have some executive functioning, and sometimes it goes off kilter. And when it goes off kilter, we don't act appropriately. And that was what happened, for the most part, to Glenn Lang, who led a very uneventful life up until the mid-2000s, when he was approached by the FBI, found to have been engaged in this activity for a period of time. And make no mistake, he didn't. Once he was treated, he stopped. Now, that may be an indication of a number of things, such as conditions of release, didn't want to end up back in the MCC, or maybe it was the treatment, and we prefer to think it was the treatment. Now, this is our view of the record. We don't think Judge Kaur appreciated the dual prongs I'm talking about, and that is, you know it's wrong, but you can't control it. And our position is the court considered.
Of course, that makes you more dangerous, right?
It does, but I didn't write.
So you should
write,
be punished more heavily, right?
No, wrong.
For compulsive behavior?
Compulsive behavior.
The rules of evidence, what, 13 through 15 or whatever, they actually recognize sexual, criminal activity as compulsive in character, and that is not in the favor of the defendant.
That's in a trial posture, Judge Posner, where the government or the prosecutor wants to offer what is essentially
right.
404B evidence.
But the premise is that sexual criminal activity is more compulsive than other criminal activities, so that having a history of the activity is strongly predictive of repetition. So I don't see that as a mitigating factor that you're...
There's two...
Undeterrable.
Look, this isn't my best case, Judge. I mean, I'm just calling it like I see it. Here's the record. For starters, 5K2.13 recognizes diminished capacity. I didn't write it. It's there. And it provides an avenue and an opportunity for a defendant who is troubled to get a diminished sentence based on diminished capacity. Now, again, USSG recognizes it. I didn't write it. It's not the same as FRE 413 to 15, as you pointed out. And the second prong of this, only relating to Mr. Lang, the government did a real investigation regarding whether there was any true child molestation here vis-a-vis him doing anything other than collecting this obscenity. And they concluded that there was nothing more there. Thank you. We're asking for the sentence be vacated and remanded.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ackerman.
Thank you, Judge.
Ms. Littleton.
May it please the court, counsel. The district court imposed a sentence within the advisory guideline range, and under this circuit's case law, that sentence is presumed reasonable. The reasonableness of a guideline sentence in this case...
What is your view of this diminished responsibility? It seems very strange. So the compulsive people who are the most dangerous, are they supposed to get a break? Is that really true?
Well, Your Honor, under the guideline, in order to qualify, if we talk sort of departure language under that particular provision, two things are required. One is a significantly reduced mental capacity, and the second is that significantly reduced mental capacity contributed to the offense.
But if a person is found insane, then he's not convicted, but he's still locked up to protect, the rest of us. But if he's given a lighter sentence because of diminished responsibility, because he's compulsive and so on, can't help himself, is there any procedure for restraining him, or is he just set free to continue his predations?
I think that, Your Honor, it would be something that could be considered in terms of a sentence, certainly under the advisory guidelines. Under when the guidelines were mandatory, it was something that could be considered for reduction, but that doesn't mean that a person would just be free to go out on the street. It means that the sentence may be reduced. There may be additional conditions that would be imposed in terms of treatment, some sort of mental health treatment, both while the person is incarcerated as well as during the period of supervised release after the person is released. So I think that there are, I believe that there are conditions which can be imposed that will relate to that a person is not simply just released with an inability to control his or her actions.
Now, you criticize Dr. Margolis's, I love these phrases, executive functioning. You criticize him, that's fine, but if his testimony were fine in every respect and he diagnosed Lange as having Asperger's syndrome, what would be the legal significance of that? So what would you do with that?
In this case, Judge, let me just point out that there was no question. No one argued that Mr. Lange suffered from Asperger's. In fact, the argument was that he suffered from an Asperger's-like disorder, that there was, in fact, no disorder that he could be diagnosed with. So to say that he suffered from Asperger's is...
Well, suppose he did. I mean...
And if he did, Your Honor, what this court concluded was that Mr. Lange had not satisfied that second prong of the guideline to qualify for diminished capacity, and that is that if he, in fact, whatever disorder he suffered from, assuming under your question that being Asperger's, that was simply not a contributing factor to this offense. And for
but
that,
I'm interested in what the government's position is on Asperger's, autism, and so on, right there. Asperger's is mild autism. He has mild Asperger's, probably, you know, just eccentric or something. But what is the significance of these particular mental ailments?
I can speak with regard to this case, Judge, and that is that it did not have a significance in this particular case.
Have you had other cases in which people pleaded autism as a defense?
I myself have not, Judge. I have not. I can specifically speak to this case, and it was very clear here that first of all, Mr. Lange did not suffer from Asperger's. He was, in fact, a very socially well-adjusted person, affable, had many friends, as was reflected in the testimony of his pastor, of his employer. He simply did not manifest the condition or the circumstances that would qualify him for that disorder. And that was never, in fact, even an argument. It was just that the Judge Kaur should reduce the defendant's sentence because he, as Judge Kaur said, had a number of almost conditions, nothing that actually qualified. Of course, then that was later belied on recross-examination of Dr. Margolis when he, in fact, said that he was able to diagnose Mr. Lange with a disorder that he never referred to in his report. So I think that Judge Kaur was certainly reasonable in concluding that Dr. Margolis's conclusion that Mr. Lange had an inability to control his behavior was simply not the case.
Well, he did find a deficit in executive functioning. So now what's that?
As I understand it from the testimony of Dr. Rothke, who was the first defense expert. There were two, Dr. Rothke and Dr. Margolis. As Dr. Rothke testified, within a person's cognitive abilities is this area of executive functioning, which is one's ability to essentially control their behavior, to stop what they're doing. And Dr. Rothke, the defense expert, testified that Mr. Lange's cognitive abilities, including his executive functioning, were intact. That was the same finding of the government's expert, Dr. Goldstein. The only person who concluded that Mr. Lange's executive functioning, his ability to control his behavior, was not intact was Dr. Margolis. Dr. Margolis recognized at the hearing that, or he admitted at the hearing, and in fact there was no dispute, that he did no cognitive testing at all and that he based his conclusion.
What would cognitive testing for executive functioning be like? A brain scan, or you ask a person questions, or what?
As I understand it, Judge, most of the testing is essentially a self-report. It's answering questions, multiple choice questions, things of that nature that as I understand it, the way that the questions are phrased, it is you're supposed to be able to tell whether or not a person is answering truthfully or attempting to cover up certain behaviors. I believe that it's all essentially multiple choice testing. And again, this is a guideline sentence that is presumed reasonable, and this was the subject of a two-day hearing in this case, subject to extensive expert testimony, as we've discussed. It is very clear from this record that Judge Kaur understood the defendant's argument, that he considered it, that he knew that the guidelines were advisory and had the ability to reduce the sentence based on that. Considering the factors in 3553A, he concluded that a guideline sentence was reasonable and appropriate here. And for those reasons and the reasons stated in the government's brief, the government would respectfully request that this court affirm the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Ackerman.
At page 12 of the appellant's opening brief, we note that Dr. Margolis described executive functioning or deficits in that as originating within the brain and nervous system that impair monitoring himself cognitively and volitionally, meaning that he knew what he was doing and he couldn't stop it. And I'd ask Judge Posner, since you've expressed, at least verbally, some interest in the psychological aspect of this case. Dr. Goldstein, who testified for the government, she opined that a series of tests that she gave, including some nasty sex penis kind of tests, did not reflect or reveal that this man was a child molester or had those symptoms commonly considered appropriate for a pedophile. And that's part of why the sentence should be reduced. Thank you.
Mr. Ackerman,
yes.
Did the pre-sentence report indicate any problems Mr. Lang had in the area of executive functioning with regard to his work in the past?
Interesting. His work was a very, very skilled, computer-driven work in a very limited work area where he would use a computer in order to assist in the manufacturing of some large items. He would sit by himself with his computer, and this manufacturing would go on pursuant to the dimensions he indicated in the computer. Had nothing to do with interacting with others.
And his contact with Dr. Margolis begins with the onset of his problems with the FBI, right? I mean, he did not have a...
No,
he
in advance.
Patient of Dr. Margolis before.
In advance of that, he did not meet with Dr. Margolis. Thank you.
All right, thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court.